Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, and I have a very special guest today. His name's Robin Koerner. He's the founder of the Blue Republicans Online and a writer for the Huffington Post. He also puts the class in classical liberal. Robin, welcome to the show.
I'm going to use that, Austin. Thank you. You might see that in an article soon. Appreciate
that's your
it.
New tagline. Welcome Thanks. To the show, Robin. Yeah, excellent, excellent. So we've got a lot to get through today, so let's get right to it. The events in Ferguson, Missouri, have had the effect of sort of shining the light on not only the problem of crime in neighborhoods across America, but the problem of the militarization of our police. Do you see that happening right now?
Do I see the militarization or the light being shone on it?
The light being shone on it. Right?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And, you know, thankfully, finally, you can be, for example, a Republican politician and you can be calling it, as well as, of course, being a Democratic politician and calling it. It's going mainstream. I mean, the problem has been there and building. For a long time. Obviously, there was that law that was passed in the 90s where all of this equipment was transferred. And I think that is a huge part of the problem. I mean, I really do think that is a big root of this problem. Once again, it's a problem that derives from politics, from the state having, I was going to say, no conception of its own bounds, but actually a complete and utter lack of common sense. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say, you know, there was the kind of the response of the police. They were aiming these rifles at protesters. I saw there was a video today that came out that showed a police officer pointing a rifle at a journalist and was like, you know, back off or I will, you know, effing kill you. And so it's kind of woken people up, I think. You know, it's we've got a response from even the most conservative senators, people like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Rand Paul, which, you know, you might expect from Rand Paul, perhaps he's a little bit more libertarian, but Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, yeah. You know, even coming and sort of saying, hey, you know, back off because they've been arresting journalists. You know, is the conversation on the right sort of changing?
Yes. I mean, it seems to me. I mean, I know no more about this than you do. I know only what the headlines come across my desk, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that's part of a broader zeitgeist, too. I think the conversation about civil rights in general is changing. It seems that the militarization of the police is right now, and probably for the short run, the biggest part of that. But so it should be. You know, that's if you're going to start anywhere. I mean, I was trying to start with the Patriot Act. Then we were trying to start with the NDAA. Mm-hmm. But if... You know, if the culture starts here with the militarization of police, if the mainstream starts here to get it, then good. I would just say there is a reason for this, which is that political reactions start along cultural fault lines, right? Culture always precedes politics. Mm-hmm. And because of the racial issue in American culture, you know, this has happened there, right? And... You know, so racial tensions, the history of race in this country have a way of pointing up political problems, mm-hmm. one might, and indeed cultural problems, of course.
All right. So, okay. Well, then I want to skip ahead to a question that I had for later that I'd like to put out there because you brought up the racial issue and I was going to kind of wait till later to get into it. But let's go ahead and get right down to it. Now, there's always two sides to every story, right? So it appears as if the policeman's report, the one specifically who shot Mike Brown, you know, is stating, it's been corroborated independently, and it appears that Mike Brown may have attacked the officer, and the police officer may have been shooting in self-defense, because he was apparently injured. And this is something that I'm just seeing reported, you know, in the last couple of hours or so, that the police officer had a pretty severe injury in his face, where his eye, like, so it's a broken bone over his eye, I believe. Now, you know, that's trying to play both sides of the story. You know, I'd like to be objective here. You know, I think the police are overly militarized. But there is the problem of the racial issue, the racial question here in the United States. Now, we're two white boys, Robin. I mean, we're about as
last
white.
Last time I checked.
Yeah, right. We're about as white as it gets. And so what happens is that political correctness in the United States, our opinions sort of matter less on this opinion, on this subject, unfortunately. But I mean, like, let's have a politically incorrect discussion here for a second. Let me ask you this, just to be, you know, to be objective. You know, I guess what I want to ask is, how do we have a conversation about the problem of looting and violence in the black communities? I mean, is it impossible for white people like yourself and myself to criticize blacks without appearing racist?
It's made a lot harder by the fact that the power of the state, the enforcement on the other side, is not trusted, right? I mean, you can only really start to criticize when you have earned moral high ground and moral reputation. That's the problem. I mean, I really do think that, again, in a way, there's a sense in which militarization of the police has to exacerbate racial division. It has to be that way. I mean, I should say I lived in Harlem for 4.5 years. I was...
really? Me too, actually.
really? Okay. Yeah. So I was, you know, on Frederick Douglass between about 121st and 122nd. And I think for a while I was the only white guy in my building. And my high street bank was on 125th Street by the Apollo. That was where I lived. Now, I did criticize, I guess you could say, what I saw as I walked down 125th Street sometimes, this quite aggressive projection of a culture. It seemed to me that there was a will within the black community that I lived among to separate itself in the way that they talked, in the way that they dressed and whatever, which I felt at the time, and I'm going back now, made some of the claims of racism, at least... hard to judge. I mean, how do you know you're not being employed if, you know, it's this, I think Cosby has probably said this 100 times, right? You know, are you not being employed because of your color if you turn up to the interview not talking properly with your pants behind you, you know, below your ass or whatever? You get the idea. Right. So look, I have no problem talking about that kind of thing. And it's massively complex.
Yeah.
But, you know, all at the end of the day, what matters is we have to be able, each side, anybody with any opinion, has to earn the respect to be listened to.
Right.
You know, and what happened to that gentleman who was killed in Ferguson is, to me, irrelevant to the story, the bigger problem of the militarization of the police and how we as a culture, including, let us say, the African-American subculture, relate to that projection of state power. They're two different issues. It matters very much, of course, how and why that gentleman was killed by that police officer. But it doesn't. But the answer to that question does not change the deeper cultural problem that we have with the police, you know, set apart from the people whom they are supposed to serve. I mean, even I feel that. I mean, I feel that, and I'm sure you do, as one of, you know, a white guy, right? I mean, I almost feel, as I look at the police become more militarized, I start to identify more culturally with those young, poor black people who may be marching right now in Ferguson. I mean, I can't help it. It's an instinctive thing.
Yeah.
So that's what we have to take care of.
Yeah, you know, I just I look at what Senator Rand Paul is doing while, you know, he's doing this outreach to the minority communities as sort of building bridges and creating a path for us to be able to have these kinds of conversations. You know, the problem is that, you know, classical liberals such as yourself and myself, you know, we have more credibility to speak about these issues about minority issues and maybe even be critical, for example, of some of the negative aspects of that culture, both having lived in Harlem and both being active civil libertarians, people who believe in reducing the role of the police state and who believe that the war on drugs disproportionately harms minority communities. You know, those are the kinds of things that may give us more credibility to speak on these issues. However, because we look white as, you know, ghosts, we sort of get thrown into this community and it's like, oh, well, you're just conservatives, you know, and it's hard for us to delineate, well, wait a minute, now, hold on, now, conservatives are over there, we're the badass libertarians over here, you know, we should have some credibility. But I sort of feel as if Rand Paul is giving us that bridge.
Definitely.
and adding that credibility that's necessary so that you know cheeky white boys like ourselves can actually talk to black people about these issues.
I think you're exactly right. He's setting a good example, and I will say that it's a shame to say this, but change will come when cheeky white boys like you and me, when we are seen to be speaking right alongside of those poor, somewhat disenfranchised people who fought the bulk of the black community, you know, or certain black communities.
It's scary because it's like you want to help, but then like, you know, there are vocal, you know, people who are like, no, we don't want your help. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Like, stay away from us and all that kind of stuff. And it makes it difficult to do so. But I think there are people who are sort of hearing the whistle of libertarianism now. There are some minorities that are like, hey, you know, like these guys are kind of all right. You know, they're talking about the issues we care about, but still got a long way to go. Now, I'd like to move on because I sent you an op-ed in the Washington Post. I don't know if you got a chance to read the whole thing, but it's...
I looked at it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the title of this piece was called "I'm a Cop. If you don't want to get hurt, don't challenge me." And it's kind of like, you know, man, makes you want to like bust a cap, you know, pull out a 9 on this, go 5-0. This guy basically said, let me just read this to you. He says, if you don't want to get shot, tased, pepper sprayed, struck with a baton, or thrown to the ground, just do what I tell you. Don't argue with me. Don't call me names. Don't tell me I can't stop you. Don't say I'm a racist pig. Don't threaten that you'll sue me and take away my badge. Don't scream at me that you pay my salary. And don't even think of aggressively walking towards me. Most field stops are complete in minutes. How difficult is it to cooperate for that long? Does that just show, like, this guy has been he's a veteran police officer. I think he's been a cop for, what, 11 years. And he doesn't even understand the most basic of civil rights. I mean, is this guy retarded? Is this the level of education that the police officers have in this country? And if so, is that why we have this problem?
There is obviously a problem of culture among the police. I mean, there obviously is. That's not to say that I don't... I have a friend who is a police officer, and I trust her implicitly. And you know, you've got to do the qualifier, right? We're not talking about all individual police officers, but there does seem to be a kind of psychological and cultural myopia in just how the police present themselves. And this article is a good example. I almost wonder if it's actually written, if it's not what it appears to be.
Almost satire, right? It's almost like it's satire. You know, as if he's trying to confirm all the negative stereotypes of police officers that we've been seeing in the last week.
Yeah, because you see, it is interesting because in a sense, you can take what he says in this article as kind of being right to some extent, as kind of being obvious. Right. You know, just go along, be polite, be civil. Mm-hmm. But the way he's presenting that doesn't seem to be very civil. It doesn't seem to be recognizing effectively the equality between the enforcers and those against whom law is enforced.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so I do think, as you say, it does seem to reflect a cultural problem within the police.
Right. So here's the thing. You know, I understand police have a job to do, that there are dangerous criminals out there, and that they, you know, sometimes dangerous criminals even, you know, carry things like AK-47s, for example, and stuff like that. But, you know, I look at this as what it seems to be like a culture of ignorance of civil rights on the part of police. You know, when they...
But that's, Austin, that exists in a culture of ignorance of civil rights on the part of complacent Americans.
That's true. That's true.
One's a context for the other, but carry on.
All right. So, what do you think of the decision to send the National Guard to Ferguson?
Well, again, you know, I'm always wary about, you know, making kind of judgments about choices that are based on massive amounts of complex evidence and information that I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. But obviously, as someone, I think that when you send the state in a militarized fashion, or representatives of the state in a militarized fashion, into the streets, you are the state drawing a line against your people. Mm-hmm. It ceases to be about what will the people take. It's the state saying, right, you know, here we come at you. Our relationship with you, from whom we borrow our power, is now one of opposition. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, you might say that's a problem with the broader political culture. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it, you know, here I'm looking at the Constitution on my wall, right? Mm-hmm. The whole point to confine the government. It doesn't seem that those who wield the guns for the government have the necessary humility and essential understanding of who they are and what they do that is required. And that's, it's such a ubiquitous problem in our politics. And it comes out of that to me.
All right. So speaking of politics, let's just flip to another topic. It's, you know, it's somewhat related to what we've been discussing, but it's just more straight up politics. We've got 2 years until the next presidential election. I know you write quite a bit about Rand Paul. What do you think about his chances if he does run for president?
Again, you know, a week is a long time in politics, right? He is making two, let me answer it like on the one hand and on the other hand. The one hand, he's making huge headway mainstreaming the ideas that we want mainstreamed. We, as classical liberals, people who, you know, love liberty, who love the Constitution. In some ways, he's making more progress in that respect than his father did. But of course, his father set this up. So all credit to him, too.
It's a birthday today, by the way. Happy birthday, Ron.
Oh, yes. Happy birthday, Ron Paul. Yes. Thanks for calling that out. That's absolutely right. Yes. Happy birthday, Dr. Paul. So this is good. And he's being seen credibly as a potential GOP nominee in the mainstream media. And, you know, and I'm, it's very clear that he is aware of the need to take with him most of his conservative base. He seems to be quite strategic. In fact, it's almost to the point where when the purist libertarians get upset with him, I think this is suggests good things for his chances. because I think the things that a lot of the philosophical purists call him out for are often not compromises of principle. They're kind of methodological compromises. He's in politics. He's being strategic. Mm-hmm. And he seems to be playing to win. So on, and I think, you know, keep going. Who knows how successful he can be. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, certainly up here in my state of Washington State, and I hear stories from other parts of the country, you know, the GOP now, lots of state GOPs, for example, county GOPs, are still riddled with people who do not want to give up control, who are the anti-liberty types, right? They're the people who promoted Romney, and they just don't want to, you know, let those of a different political stripe, you know, not their team, not their identity, kind of take over. So there's going to be resistance. Can Rand's leadership and this move in the zeitgeist, which he is a part of, he and people like Amash and so on, people who are having some political success, can they have so much success quickly enough that other people in the Republican Party just accept that that is the way it's going? The train is leaving the station. And if they want to win, they've just got to let us liberty types who do provide all of the new energy and the numbers, the incoming types, the GOP, certainly the incoming activists, are mostly more libertarian. Mm-hmm. So at some point, the GOP has to kind of let it happen. Will it happen in time? I don't know. 2016? Don't know. But as it does happen, and however long it takes, obviously Rand is already being a big part of that.
Very interesting. Okay, well, Robin, so tell us, where can my listeners find out more about your work?
Okay, so pretty much all of my writing is on the Huffington Post. Just search my name, Robin Koerner, K-O-E-R-N-E-R. I'm on Twitter, R. Koerner. We have a big Facebook group, 15,000 people, Blue Republican, and of course, bluerepublican.org. Is kind of the organizational hub, but that's being going to be completely redesigned and repurposed very soon.
Robin Koerner, he's the Blue Republican, ladies and gentlemen, the man who puts the class in classical liberal. Robin, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Austin.